Hi, it's Charlie Connolly here. I write every week in the New European on books and literature and great European lives. If you'd like to enjoy more from the New European, you can join us by subscribing at theneweuropean.co.uk/subscribe. That's theneweuropean.co.uk/subscribe. Great European Lives. From the New European. Vaslav Nijinsky. 12th of March 1889 to the 8th of April 1950. The world found itself teetering on a cusp on January the 19th, 1919. 2 months after the armistice, the Paris Peace Conference was into its second day, thrashing out the Versailles Treaty. The Dáil Éireann in Dublin was preparing to declare an Irish Republic, and the Spartacist uprising had just been brutally repressed in Germany after a week-long general strike. In Switzerland, meanwhile, arguably the greatest male dancer in the history of ballet was warming up for a recital that would prove to be the fulcrum of his life story. There's a look of the fairy tale castle about the Suvretta House Hotel, backed up against the Alps on the outskirts of St. Moritz, its witch's hat turrets peeping above the trees. In the ballroom that evening, the couple of hundred invited guests taking their seats were unaware they were about to witness a bizarre curtain call for a relatively brief yet extraordinary career. When the lights went down, Vaslav Nijinsky, 29 years old, and renowned before the war as the world's most gifted and innovative dancer, emerged from the wings carrying a chair. He placed it at the centre of the stage, sat down, and stared at the audience. Minutes passed. His wife Romola would say afterwards that Nijinsky sat there for a full half hour. Motionless, wordless, as if trying to read the thoughts of each audience member. Eventually he stood up, removed the chair, unrolled a spool of black velvet across the stage, crossed it with a roll of white, and announced, "Now I will dance you the war, with its suffering, with its destruction, with its death. The war which you did not prevent, and so are all responsible for." As his accompanist struck up the melancholy chord progression of Chopin's Prelude No. 20 in C minor, Nijinsky began to fling himself around the stage in a succession of jerky, apparently freestyle movements, with a wild look in his eyes that seemed to combine fear with anger. 6 weeks later, he was in a Zurich mental institution, diagnosed as schizophrenic by the man who invented the term. Nijinsky would never dance again. The St. Moritz spectacle came almost exactly a decade after Nijinsky had become the darling of Paris as the leading member of Sergei Diaghilev's Ballet Russe. They called him Le Dieu de la Danse for his extraordinary combination of physical strength, lightness of movement, complete control of every part of his body, and an actor's ability to bring astonishing depth to his performances. He oozed presence. When Nijinsky was on stage, audiences found their gaze locked upon him. This charismatic, scene-stealing dominance led Anna Pavlova to refuse to dance with him. Nijinsky's leaps became legendary. He could jump higher than any other dancer, and audiences gasped as he appeared to hang in the air in a way that defied physics. When his character in Le Spectre de la Rose sprang through a window in the scenery, it would induce a standing ovation every time. He was still rising when he disappeared from view. When Nijinsky arrived in Paris, barely out of his teens, he had already almost single-handedly revived the Russian ballet world in decline. At 16, before he graduated from the Imperial Ballet School in St. Petersburg, he was already being hailed as the eighth wonder of the world. So keen were the Russians to see their prodigy on the national stage, Nijinsky turned down overtures to leave the academy early and join the Russian capital's prestigious Mariinsky Theatre. When he finally arrived at the Mariinsky in 1907, it was not as a chorus member in the traditional manner, but as a coryphée, a leading dancer in the corps de ballet, an instant promotion unheard of in the company's history. Within months, Nijinsky had risen to danseur noble, a lead dancer, taking on prestigious roles after an ascent as swift and exalted as one of his famous leaps. When in 1909 the impresario Sergei Diaghilev decided to add ballet to the roster of Russian arts he was introducing to Western Europe, he'd already succeeded with art and classical music, he had only Nijinsky in mind as his principal male. He also took the dancer as his lover, and they lived in Paris openly as a couple, while the Ballet Russe choreographer Michel Fokin created extraordinary roles for Nijinsky, a succession of leaping, androgynous exotics that captivated Parisian audiences. By 1912, Nijinsky had turned to choreography himself. He adapted Debussy's Prelude d'après-midi d'une faune and Je, instilling each with tangible eroticism, eschewing entirely traditional balletic shapes and positions in favour of daring new movements that required the dancers to all but forget their classical training. It was quite a task. L'après-midi d'une faune only lasted 11 minutes, but took 100 hours of rehearsal. The premiere of Igor Stravinsky's The Rite of Spring at the Théâtre des Champs-Élysées on May the 29th, 1913, is infamous for the violent reaction its groundbreaking musical style provoked in the crowd. A laborious and puerile barbarity is how Le Figaro described one of the most important works of the 20th century. What's often forgotten is that the ballet was choreographed by Nijinsky. A performance of heavy-footed plodding and stomping by dancers who, unable to hear the orchestra due to the cacophony from the audience, kept time by listening to a frantic Nijinsky, screaming the beats from the wings. The Ballet Russe escaped most of the subsequent fallout by embarking on a lengthy tour of South America. Diaghilev remained in Paris, having cooled on Nijinsky both professionally and personally in the months leading up to the tour. Matters were brought to a head when Nijinsky, apparently on a whim, married Romola Dipulski in Buenos Aires in September 1913. Dipulski, the daughter of Hungary's leading actress, was a fan of the dancer to the point of joining the tour just to be near him. But even she was startled when, after 2 weeks of awkward occasional communication during the Atlantic crossing, neither spoke the other's language, Nijinsky proposed. When news of the nuptials reached Diaghilev, he was incensed and fired Nijinsky from the company. This was a move that effectively ended the dancer's career. The Ballet Russe was the only company in the world capable of accommodating Nijinsky's innovative, demanding roles and choreography. The outbreak of war the following year found the newlyweds in Budapest visiting Romola's family, leading to Nijinsky, as a Russian, being detained in his mother's villa by the authorities under house arrest. A brief rapprochement with Diaghilev saw him allowed to leave for a tour of the USA in 1916 that proved disastrous both financially and for Nijinsky's mental health. In America, he became a sudden and fervent follower of Tolstoy's ascetically austere religious philosophies and took to wearing Russian peasant garb. After his final public performance in September 1917, a bizarre recital in Uruguay with Arthur Rubinstein that left the pianist in tears at Nijinsky's clear mental decline, Romola moved the couple to the peace of the Alps. The first year in St. Moritz saw a marked improvement in Nijinsky's condition. By January 1919, however, he was spending days locked in his studio, drawing a constant stream of alarming images featuring dark, staring eyes. On the day of that Savretta House performance, Nijinsky began a 6-week diary that charted his further descent into paranoia, megalomania, crippling self-doubt and schizophrenia, until the point of his committal to a psychiatric hospital in Zurich. When moved to another hospital, Nijinsky began attacking his attendants and claiming that his limbs were not his own but belonged to somebody else. The second half of his life would be spent away from the public eye. Lengthy spells in hospitals interspersed with periods at home with Romola, until the couple settled after the Second World War in Virginia Water in Surrey. In early April 1950, Nijinsky, who seemed to be in improving health after moving to England, watched a rehearsal of the French National Ballet ahead of a television broadcast at Alexandra Palace, after which he fell ill and died of kidney failure a few days later. That last ballet he saw was being staged for television, the medium that would help to make global superstars of dancers like Nureyev and Fontaine. Nijinsky's legendary reputation was forged purely on word of mouth. The exploits of the son of itinerant Polish circus dancers captured in the memories of the audiences, who watched him soar, as if released from the bonds and cares of the world itself. Great European Lives is brought to you by The New European. It's written and presented by Charlie Connolly, and the series producer is Steve Anglesey.